The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member. And we don't mean your Aunt Dolores.
You stink!
The TNT Shop has it all. At TNTRadio.live. Alex Zaharoff-Royt and Talkin' Tech on today's News Talk, TNT.
Thank you for joining me on Talking Tech with Alex Zaharoff-Royt. If you're watching live, it is 7 p.m. in Sydney and Melbourne, 4 a.m. in New York, and 8 a.m. in London. So whether you're watching live, watching an on-demand stream, a very good evening, good morning, and good afternoon, whichever part of the world you're watching from. Now, as always, the tech world never sleeps, and plenty of things have happened this week, and here's just a selection. Intel's latest special edition unlocked processor, the 14th generation Core i9 14900KS, can reach up to 6.2 gigahertz without overclocking. And this makes it the fastest desktop processor for consumer use. Now, last year's processor could only reach 6 gigahertz. Not that that's that much of a difference, but this processor has 24 cores, 32 threads, and has 36 megabytes of smart cache technology, which is shared between the various cores to deliver powerful performance in gaming and content creation workloads. Now, next up is Minecraft. If you play the Xbox version of the game through your PC's ability to launch Xbox games, and you update the Xbox version of Minecraft through your PC, Microsoft warns that you could lose the worlds you've created. Now, the solution is to download a separate tool called the Gaming Services Repair Tool, and to run this before installing any updates, which will avoid the update error. The next bit of news is LG having launched a whole suite of new TVs for 2024, from its more affordable QNED panels featuring a whopping 98-inch size screen, which is visibly much larger compared to, a 75-inch model, through to its top-of-the-line OLED panels. And while these naturally all boast better, brighter, and more colorful screens than last year's models, and surprisingly come at prices of up to 20% lower than last year, you also get a handy bonus, the ability to upgrade your TV's operating system to a new version of WebOS, the system that powers LG TVs for the next 4 years, just like you can update your smartphone. Now, previously, you needed to buy a new TV to get an entirely new version of the operating system. So while updates may well have been available for security or, you know, minor updates during the year, these weren't entirely new operating systems. So LG will extend this capability for a lesser number of years back to select 2023 and 2022 models. So the age of keeping your TV much more up to date, at least with LG TVs, has now arrived and makes your LG TV more able to keep up with the changing times. Over on the Samsung side of the fence, the company has just launched its 77-inch S95D TV, an OLED model designed to directly compete with LG's class-leading OLED TVs, with Samsung launching a unique feature, which it's calling the world's first anti-glare technology. Now, I remember seeing this technology being demonstrated at CES 2024 in Las Vegas just earlier this year, and the glare being reflected was remarkably dimmed without affecting the brightness of the screen. And given the harsh Australian sun that can stream through windows, this just means better overall picture quality, and it's something that will eventually be on all TVs, although for the moment, Samsung is leading the pack in this regard. Samsung also launched its new mid-range but still premium Galaxy A55 and A35 smartphones, which in Australian dollars are $699 and $549 respectively. You can do the math to see what it is in US dollars or UK pounds, but it'll be, you know, more or less similar once you do the conversion. Now, they don't have the AI-enhanced features that you'll find on the Galaxy S24, S24 Plus, or the S24 Ultra, which started over $1,000 and go up. But for everyday users of smartphones who want the performance to be doing several things at the same time without the phone feeling sluggish, it will definitely be worth spending the extra money on these models. Both have a 6.6-inch bright and colorful OLED screen, brighter and more colorful than last year, at a 120Hz refresh rate, which ensures really smooth motion. Both also have 8GB of RAM and a 120GB selection of storage. Both come with Samsung's own Exynos processors rather than cheaper ones, designed to ensure the smartphone experience feels smooth and fluid. And those cheaper smartphones at half the price from various stores or even the service counter at supermarkets. They look good, they have big screens, but they can really feel slow and sluggish when multitasking. And these days, people are using their phones, you know, they're navigating, well, not just the web, but they're using GPS, they're listening to music, they're doing several things at the same time. And on a cheaper phone with a less capable processor, you really do notice the difference. Now, both of these two new models have cameras on the back, three of them for traditional photography, wide, and for macro photography. And of course, the A55 has better cameras than the A35 model, but they're both pretty good and obviously a lot better than the ones you'll find on the models at half the price. And both feature Samsung's Knox technology for the first time for better smartphone security against hackers and rogue apps. They're cheap enough to buy outright, but will be very affordable when on 12 and 24 month plans. And while they don't come with the 7 years of OS and security updates on the flagship Galaxy S24 series, they will come with 4 years of OS updates and 5 years of security updates. So this makes them attractive for those looking to purchase a smartphone for well under $1,000. Well, it's now time to introduce my guest for tonight, Steve Sammartino. He is Australia's leading futurist and an excellent international keynote speaker. He has a deep understanding of disruptive technology and the wider economy. He's the author of two best-selling strategy books, The Great Fragmentation and The Lessons School Forgot. And he regularly appears on national TV and radio and print and is consistently rated as the best speaker of every conference he attends. And amongst many other achievements, he's also the author of Samsung's latest report, Australians at Home in 2029, which Steve has joined us today to speak about. Steve, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Alex. Nice to be here.
Yeah, it's great for you to be here. Thanks so much for your time. Now, we'll talk about your first experiences with technology and the catalyst that saw you decide to become a futurist all those years ago a little later. But first, I'd like to make the observation that for all of our incredible technologies today, we're still in the black and white TV era of modern tech when we compare this to the visions of future of the future from sci-fi writers. I mean, wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. We've been really in the same paradigm, I want to say, since around about the mid-90s. And I'll just explain for everyone what that is. Essentially, graphical user interface and internet technology, the linking of those two things. Of course, the devices have got smarter. They've got greater resolution, greater memory, all of those things. But even, you know, the smartphone where you're using your hands to operate the device and the UX has changed, but ostensibly we're in that same paradigm that hasn't really changed yet. It's really just got a little bit faster, a little bit more convenient, and we've increased the number of devices and what we do with them. But we've really been in a really similar paradigm, which is really just tiny computation and internet accessibility with cameras added. That's really it. I mean, we added the GPS and the smartphone was quite a shift, but it does feel like now we've approached a fork in the road where we're going to have a significant step change in technology, the impact that it has on our lives, and really the presence it has without it requiring our full attention. At the moment, the devices are very attention hungry, and I'd even say immature like a baby. As a futurist, I love to look at this idea of biomimicry, and you can tell the maturity of something by how much attention it requires. And at this point, as I think everyone would agree, the devices really require a lot of our attention to function.
Yeah, it's a bit like Tamagotchis. You had to always look after them and you had to be really look. I mean, I remember at the time, the kids were so distraught that the Tamagotchis were sort of dying in the 90s when these burst onto the scene that they gave them to their parents, and their parents had to look after these little Tamagotchis until the kids came home from school. But, AI is – sorry, go on.
I was going to say, it's really prescient, the Tamagotchi. We all got our own Tamagotchi that lives in our pocket, our little piece of glass that really steals more attention than maybe even a Tamagotchi ever did.
Absolutely. I mean, I turn the notifications for most of my apps off because otherwise it just, you know, the screen flashes on, there's a notification there. I mean, if I have X going, it's popping up all the time. So I've just turned notifications off. I'd like to be the person checking my device. I don't need my device to be telling me to look at it. Now, obviously with AI, it's only since ChatGPT's bursting onto the scene that we finally had a chatbot that could truly deliver human-like answers and deliver human-like conversations as opposed to the ELIZA program from decades ago that used the trick of turning what you said into a question to simulate engagement and meaningful conversation. Now, as a futurist, this must have been an even more exciting time for you than it was for everyone else, because you could see that this step change was about to happen.
Yeah, it really was exciting. And I think the emergence of large language models, a lot of people might not be aware. I mean, the first paper on transformers was in 2016 or 17. It really was not that long ago. And the fact now that we have in market real large language models that have incredible utility in generative AI, it's significant. But for me, it's significant for two key reasons, Alex. And the first of those is it creates a democratization. And technological step changes happen when we democratize the technology so that everyone has equal access and usability to that technology, right? That, I mean, that's the first thing. And let's think through some of the technological epochs that we've lived through in society. The Model T Ford, everyone gets a car, everyone can afford it. The television, you have the world streaming into your living room, everyone can afford it. The internet, the smartphone, all of these step changes are available to everyone. And that's what creates revolutions. The other thing too is that you know you're in a revolution when the technology, the first time you use it, it feels like magic. It's like a moment of magic where you really are astounded. You're like, wow, this changes everything. And that's happened. The second reason I'm pretty excited about it is that what we have now with artificial intelligence for the first time is what I call a horizontalization. Most of the AIs up until this point, and as you know, we're 50 years into artificial intelligence, they've been narrow and they can work in a singular context. I mean, maps to tell you where to go in the car is a great example, one of the great AIs, but it's based on an if this, then that protocol. The interesting thing about large language models and generative AI is that they're horizontalized so they can go from context to context to context. That really changes things. It's general purpose artificial intelligence where it can be used in a multitude of things. And given that they're language-based, language is the fabric of all human knowledge. So we put something there that is useful to everyone because the AI can put its branches into every part of human existence. And then on the flip side, it's available and usable for everyone. Those are the ingredients of a revolution. So I think it's exciting for everyone.
Absolutely. I mean, and just for people who are wondering, when you talk about transformers, this is the T in GPT, like ChatGPT. This stands for Generative Pre-Trained Transformer. And that's where it takes all this information that it's been trained upon, all the books and websites and emails and everything else that can be from across the internet or from your own personal life. And it can transform that into fresh information. And I mean, this heralds the long-awaited beginning of the natural language interface. I was helping my aunt set up a brand new Brother laser printer. And this was one of those ones that was just a laser. It didn't have the automatic sheet feeder and the little 2 or 3 or 4 inch screen. It just had a little tiny LCD screen, a bit like a one line version of the Nokia screens from, you know, 20 years ago. And to input the password for the Wi-Fi, you had up and down buttons and it had to go 0 to 9 and then A, B, C, D all the way down. And I was setting it up, took a little while. And also this particular model could do automatic duplexing, which is double-sided printing. And my aunt was saying to me, if I didn't have you, how would I know how to set any of this up? And I said, look, you could call the geeks to you guys, or there'd be some other tech guy, or, you know, your two sons could probably help you with this as well. But I said, look, pretty soon, and hopefully before the end of the decade, you'll simply be able to talk to the device and say, here's the password. I'm telling you what it is. I want you to, you know, you didn't print it properly. I want you to print double-sided pages. And, you know, just the ability to talk and have the technology understand what you're saying. I mean, this is something that sci-fi writers have dreamed up and shown us on TV shows and movies and in books for decades, but it's finally coming true.
Yeah, it really has arrived. And it's not just that we can talk to the machines and they understand our language. And we've been on a long path. If you look all the way down to, you know, binary code, all the way up to JavaScript and now large language models, we've been getting better at teaching the technology our language. That does a couple of important things. It democratizes the tech in terms of usability. But what it does is it makes everyone an AI developer. And so with a lot of the open source GPTs, you can train and build your own AI by putting parameters in, uploading data into the database that wouldn't be there without you. And also with language, it creates a level of nuance where the end user can add their creativity. Because as you know, there's, you know, tens of ways to say the same thing. And the idea of prompt engineering and working with the AI to extract something that you imagineer, let's say, becomes a really democratizing and empowering thing for all users, because we all have different experiences. And so this overlap between our viewpoint and the AI coming together creates an entirely new output potential and experience. So I love the fact that everyone now can participate in a level, even creating code and creating AIs, if you don't have those traditional skills within that realm.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, it's 20 past the hour, so we're going to take a quick break. And I just want to say, if you've missed your favorite TNT show or interview, simply listen or watch it when you want, wherever you want. Just visit episodes on the TNT Radio website. We're also on rumble.com, bitchute.com, or brighteon.com. We are also on all the major podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, Podbean, iHeart, and TuneIn. So now there is no reason to miss out on anything on today's News Talk TNT. Back with more Steve after the break.
TNT's David Curtin.
In my mind, government spending in the UK is absolutely horrendous. It has got completely out of control over the last 14 years of Conservative rule and 13 years before that of Labour rule. You would probably be astounded if you actually knew how much the government spent. In this financial year, these are the figures, the estimate for how much it wants to spend on everything, or how much it needs to spend, is £1.2 trillion, or £1.2 million, if you like, which is an amount of money that we cannot really comprehend.
David Curtin on today's News Talk TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
It sounds pretty good.
It sounds real, dude.
Not bad, huh?
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Thanks for joining me back on Talking Tech with Alex Zaharov-Reut. And Steve, we were just before the break talking about how this natural language user interface is coming. And this is one of the things that you've been writing about in the report, this idea of ambient AI. Now, the report was one that you collaborated on with Samsung called Australians at Home in 2029. And really, this could be the world at home in 2029. Yeah, so that's right. We're going to go through the five trends. But before we do that, there was a number of notable findings. Are there some that you just want to quickly go through before we go through the trends one by one?
Look, the thing that I think is really important, Alex, before we go each of the trends one by one, is that we need to remember that 5 years is not a long time in technology. Mm. And the next 5 years isn't going to give us the same as the last 5 years in progress. It's going to give us 20 years worth of progress.
Yeah.
Because we have this acceleration with these technologies. It's called the law of accelerating returns. And it's not just Moore's law. You know, there's all sorts of other accelerating technology laws. You know, there's Butter's law and Crider's law, and all of these ones about computation, electricity use, lights, LEDs that have that same computation impact. So while some of this sounds like fantasy, I promise you it's going to be reality. So we need to keep that in our mind.
Yeah. And look, one of the things that I remember, you know, you always hear about it. We're reaching peak oil. We're running out of this, running out of that. My father always used to say that the one thing that we will never run out of is brain power. And that is what solves all these different problems. I mean, even the ability to launch into space and mine the asteroid belt and bring down those minerals and blocks of ice and all the rest. I mean, that's been written about in sci-fi for years. I mean, there's a whole universe full of resources. We just have to be able to get off the planet and go and get them. So there's no lack of anything on this world except perhaps attention span on the internet and common sense.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you remind me of Buckminster Fuller. I mean, he was the OG futurist, right? And he's had this thought that he called ephemeralization. And what he said was, with enough knowledge, we can create everything from nothing. Hmm. And that remains to be true to this day. And I can't see that changing as time goes by, especially as artificial intelligence gives us new knowledge and new ideas to make new discoveries for new resources.
Yeah, look, I've already read about AI helping to create new medicines, helping to figure out how to make batteries more efficient. I mean, AI is just the tip of the iceberg. And in fact, the first trend of the report is ambient AI forming the ecosystem of the home. I mean, AI finally is moving at what seems to be like the fastest pace ever, and yet it's, you know, just the beginning. So how else do you see it evolving throughout the year, you know, and through to the end of the decade? And what does ambient AI, you know, forming the ecosystem of the home in the context of the report mean?
So there's a few pieces to ambient AI. The first of that is that all of the devices will have the ability to talk to each other. And because we've got that human language layer on top, we can direct the devices on how they connect with each other underneath our voice. And ambient AI is that connection and the Internet of Things model finally coming to fruition, where the cupboard knows what's in it, the fridge knows what's in it. It understands where you're going, what your needs are. It anticipates future needs that you haven't thought of yet. All of the devices becoming connected and ambient. The other one is that the technology becomes recessive. At the moment, everything is a little bit, you have to pay attention to it. You have to be the input master. And the input is typically mostly with your fingers, a little bit with your voice. But it's going to have all five senses within the home. So the AIs will be watching, anticipating, learning, understanding the differences of each human in the home and who they are and what they do and what their habits are. Not just anticipate what you need, but make suggestions and really understand each person's personality and the requirements of the home as an asset base and integrate it almost like a micro smart warehouse that knows what we need from an entertainment perspective, from a sustenance perspective, from an energy perspective. And the AI will literally be in the walls, first through devices, and then eventually it's like electricity. And it's almost as if where we've been in the last 20 or 30 years is our technology is like little gas lamps that we've had in various places around the home. And they're independent, a little bit connected. But this ambient AI move is they all become interconnected like the electricity system, but they have smartness in it. So the house is smart. It knows what's in it and it gets smarter as time goes by. And the good news is it's not like we have to go through an entire renovation and, you know, open up the walls to put the electricity in. The devices are already here, and through wireless connections, they'll start to interact and talk to each other in the next, you know, 1, 2, 3 years. It's already possible. As we know, the future's already arrived. It's just unevenly distributed. And now we're going to be connecting that up.
Yeah, that's one of the quotes from William Gibson's Neuromancer that I quote often. The future has already been invented, just hasn't been widely distributed yet. I mean, the iPhone was in development in 2004, if not earlier. It was an iPad-sized device, and so it was there. But it took another 3 or 4 years of development. And it's often said that a technology has really arrived and is just a natural part of people's lives when you don't think about it anymore. We only think about flicking the light switch or turning on the water and you know, not experiencing something when it fails. You turn a light switch and nothing happens. Otherwise, it's just a natural part of our lives. I mean, already, just the ability to, through your phone, to query your washing machine or your dryer, as an example, to know how much longer it's got to go or what setting it was on, or even to pause it so you could add something to it. It's already here. But
It will know when to put on the washing. You know, we'll have humanoid robots like the Samsung Ball to go and put things in the washing in a couple of years. But I think the more invisible the technology is, the better it is, right? Let's think about the car. You know, the motor is not there. You don't see it. It's invisible. Electricity, it's invisible. When a technology is invisible, that's when it reaches the human level.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, this takes us into the second trend, which is rolling lounge rooms that transport you anywhere. Now, today's cars are already little bubbles of, you know, Western comfort and connectivity. But how will AI, entertainment, autonomous driving, and even greater comfort and more converge to truly deliver on the promise of transportation in style, luxury, and whichever blend of productivity, relaxation, or entertainment you desire?
Yeah. So I think cars are about to go through a couple of revolutions. Obviously, the move towards electric cars is happening quick. And I don't buy into the argument that they've stalled or any of that, because the economics of electric cars are that they're cheaper to run. They have 90% less moving parts. And of course, you can generate free energy to run them, whether it's through solar or wind or what have you. So that's an absolute inevitability. By the way, in Australia, electric cars sales have doubled every year for the past 7 years. And on that trajectory, by 2026, the majority of new cars sold will be electric. So this is that exponential thing again. People don't realize that electric cars are on an exponential curve. And so what that means is that the operation of our cars becomes a lot cheaper and better for the environment. So we'll move very quickly to electric cars. And the car, the rolling lounge room, I'm calling it, because I think it's going to change its shape, right? Cars have really been the same as a horse and carriage with a motor in the front instead of a horse, really, since the 1910s. They actually haven't changed much. And while we were seduced that autonomous vehicles would maybe arrive a little bit earlier than they have, we're very, very close now. We have a number of cities in the US. I think Adelaide has some tests going on. And I think within the next sort of 3 to 5 years, autonomous vehicles with level 4 autonomy will be commonplace. And that changes things, right? That means, what does the car look like? Do you have two seats, you know, facing each other? You know, or do we have like a little round lounge room? And I call it the rolling lounge room because the car then has this connection with the ambient AI house and they talk to each other. And it's merely some steps from one lounge room to the other. And we have this continuity of activities from the house into the car. Maybe you're on your way to work, you're having a coffee and you're doing some work on your laptop. You get in the car and then you continue that. Or you were watching that particular movie and then you get into the car and you continue that. Or you're in bed, you're rushed out of bed. You get in the car and now you're in bed again in the car. So you're having a snooze on your way to work. So it becomes really a little microcosm which replicates and becomes a quasi-digital twin of the house with the operations, entertainment, what you do, and how it's powered.
Yeah. And look, a great example of technology moving and evolving at a rapid pace is with batteries. Now, we have seen that there've been a number of these lithium ion fires in cars. I mean, they have this runaway thermal reaction that's like a jet engine spewing out these flames, and it's very hard to put out. But I've interviewed in the past, and I'll be interviewing again soon on this particular show, a gentleman by the name of Charlie Welch, who has a company called ZapBat, and he's using technology which is decades old. It's called lithium titanate, and it was used by NASA and used by the military. And this battery technology, it's very similar in price now to lithium ion. It has the same sort of number of hours that it can be used for, but instead of only 1,500 charging cycles, it's like 10 to 20 times that. So instead of 2 or 3 years of usage, you're talking about 1 to 2 to 3 decades before the battery needs replacing. It doesn't get damaged. I mean, that's why the military used it. So if it gets damaged, it doesn't explode. Yep. And the price, whilst it's a bit more expensive, once they commercialize it and it's available at scale, it's just going to completely replace the lithium-ion batteries. And you can imagine, if you had a battery in the back of your phone, that you could move from phone to phone to phone for the next 10 phones that you own. So, this problem of batteries having these combustibility issues is going to go away. And that's yet another great example. I don't know what you've heard about tech, but about batteries, but I remember an Intel event I went to, they said that, you know, the processors double with the transistors every 18 months, but battery technology sort of doubles every 18 years. But that's all about to change.
Well, we have had a number of curve jumps, and Alex, you'd know about this idea of curve jumps where you're on a particular curve, but then something else comes in, which is an entirely new technology paradigm, which changes things. There's 2 points on that. I mean, we've been in 3 curves in terms of computation. You know, first we had punch cards, then we had vacuum tubes, and then we had transistors and microprocessors. And we've had a number of different batteries that we've used, nickel and so on, and then we've got onto lithium. As you've mentioned, there's a number of battery typologies and materials which are strong candidates for the next curve jump. You know, some of the wonder materials like graphene batteries, which can have up to 10,000 times the charge. I mean, these are still in research phases yet. There's a number of different materials which will far exceed the capacity of lithium ion and also be less combustible. And in addition to that, this is where you get this Venn diagram overlap. And because we have artificial intelligence and large language models, It enables us to find answers to things that we otherwise would not find, because it can go through large swaths of research, of millions of research papers and ideas, and maybe find some of those solutions that we would never find. Or we can ask it to test all of the different materials and molecular structures to find us something that we would never find again in a research lab because we didn't think of it. And that's why I'm a real strong believer that we will be able to move to a all renewable environment, maybe even quicker than most people think, because we're going to be enlightened by artificial intelligence for new ways to store energy and different materials which enhance our technology tools.
Yeah, it's the combination of brute force and intelligence that delivers on the promise that sci-fi and technology has been talking about for so long.
Absolutely, yeah. And that brute force thing is really important in terms of finding insights. I mean, you also have that production improvement as well. The number of batteries that we produce and solar panels. There's Swanson's Law, which states that for the doubling of manufacturing capacity in solar panels, the prices get 22% cheaper. I mean, and that's continued radically. So we will get there. And I just love to remind people that the tech we use today may not be the tech that we use tomorrow. So the limitations that you're pointing out are often, they become yesterday's limitations.
Yeah. I mean, even the CSIRO only this week announced that it can print solar panels onto rolls and rolls of plastic. And instead of having to use gold and other minerals, actually they can put the material for the solar panels into ink effectively. And so they can print this in these huge rolls, and then they can wrap these around satellites, around cars, they can put them into clothes. And the efficiency is only about 15%. That's about 10 to 15% less than the silicon solar panels. But those are normally quite rigid. I have some on the roof outside, there, but you can't easily deploy those. And so there are just advances happening all over the place. And I like to say that short of a nuclear, financial, medical, or environmental catastrophe, the best is yet to come.
Yeah, and that's right. I mean, obviously those big catastrophes would be bad, but yeah, the idea of biomimicry comes up once more. You look at the ability to photosynthesize energy from the sun, from plants, and that they're flexible and they change their shape. We've got a long way to go. We've really only been in 200 years of this paradigm of industrialization. I mean, we really could have exponential learnings, which we're going to say 50 years from now, oh my God, I can't believe how dumb we were.
Yeah. Now, I've got a whole stack of questions still to ask, but there's a question on the chat from Eliana who's saying, Alex, do you think the tech is being developed or released bit by bit before giving it to us? And just before I ask you to answer, I would say that, you know, because the future has already been invented and it just hasn't been widely distributed yet, I mean, technological breakthroughs are happening all the time. The challenge, at least as I see it, is in the commercialization and the scaling of it. It's all great. I mean, you can already have a solar panel that can have 47% efficiency, as I was reading. I mean, even the ANU, the Australian National University in Australia, has these perovskite cells, which is the ones that can be printed on these rolls, and they can mix them in with the silicon solar cells. But the problem is that trying to commercialize this and make it so that it's affordable and can be rapidly rolled out, that's the problem. So it's not that they're necessarily wanting to hold it back. It's just that, you know, the 47% efficiency in the lab for the solar panel is under strict lab conditions with really concentrated light. You just can't get that with solar panels at the moment. But Steve, what are your thoughts on that question from our chat room?
I'm a non-conspiracy guy. I've worked with enough global corporations over my career to know that any technology that is launchable technologically and there's a market for it, they will push to get it out there as quickly as possible, because it's incumbent upon large companies to maximize shareholder wealth. And the way you do that is by launching products that you have an advantage in as soon as you do it. So this idea that we would be holding back technology, I don't buy that. I mean, I would say that you do get industries like oil and coal that want to maintain the status quo, absolutely. But I don't think that companies who have technological abilities would ever hold back a product if they think that the market would tolerate the price. I mean, it needs to be economic to sell it, and there needs to be enough customers willing to pay that price. Then certainly they would launch it. So I'm a non-believer in holding back. But I do believe that companies that are in industries that are about to be disrupted will do what they can politically to hold back the ship towards a better form of technology. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's been plenty of conspiracy theories about cars that can run on air or on water over the last 40 years. And in fact, RCA in the US was famous for having had somebody come to them. That at the time, they were doing AM radios, and somebody invented FM radio, and they brought it to RCA, and the boss of RCA bought it, said, thanks very much, put it on the shelf, and said, no, we're not going to launch this until we're ready. So, I mean, Elena's question is actually based in historical fact.
Yes,
but,
yes.
That was 50 years ago. Things have changed in
2024. That's true. But that holding back is what I mentioned. That's an incumbent wanting to maintain the status quo as opposed to a company that can launch new things which give competitive advantage. So that's an example of what I just mentioned. By the way, you know, I did make a car that runs on air once, Alex. I don't know if you know this, but no, I once built, and this is a quirky one for everyone tuning in, I built a full-size drivable car made of Lego with 500,000 pieces with an engine made of Lego, and the engine ran on air, and I crowdfunded on then Twitter, now X. So I did do that. People could probably see that in YouTube. It's had tens of millions of views. So you can make a car that runs on air. Here's the trick. You've got to compress the air, which takes more energy than it does to drive it. So often a lot of these conspiracy theories on these new methods to run things, there's complexities, and you need to use more energy to create the new form than it energy it saves.
Yeah.
So there you go. I've got some runs on the board in that place.
Yeah. Now, look, time for a break again. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do. Crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. Now, it's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from the mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We are now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission. And I personally have donated because I believe in the station and its values. Now, we will be joining Steve again after the break, so see you in a moment.
The challenges our planet's animals are facing sometimes feel a bit heavy.
The animals haven't eaten in a day, 2 days, they haven't drank anything. They're cold, they're dehydrated.
As soon as we started our descent, everywhere I could see was mud, just absolutely mud.
So the country has been in prolonged drought so long, it was like a tinderbox waiting to go up.
Okay, very heavy. Each of us wants to be part of the solution, and we can be. Remember that there's good happening right now. At home.
All right, we were able to get into your unit and we have all four of your cats. So,
okay.
And around the world. For any animal in any disaster. So let's focus on that, right? Be part of the solution, one rescue at a time. Search ifa.org/disaster ready.
Many pollution sources can affect the air you breathe, from power plants and vehicles to dust and wildfires. Knowing more about local air quality can help you protect your health. If you're thinking about buying an air sensor, EPA has a series of videos to help you get the most out of it. Learn how EPA collects and uses regulatory data, how EPA communicates health messaging, and how to interpret the readings from your sensor. Visit epa.gov/air-sensor-toolbox.
We're talking tech with Alex Zaharoff-Royd on today's News Talk, TNT.
Now, we've got about 18 minutes to go and another 10 questions, and we're only up to trend number 3, which is soft robotics, the emergence of physical AI with a human touch. Now, we've seen robots depicted in novels and movies and TV shows for decades, and it's only now that we finally see robots like Elon Musk's Optimus, which can fold clothes or walk relatively normally. And we even saw a glimpse of Samsung's own work in robotics a couple of years ago at CES, where a roving robotic hand on wheels could stack your dishwasher, set the table, and do more. So is the dream of human humanoid androids from the iRobot movie or C-3PO-style robots, something we'll truly see by the end of the decade in homes, just as we saw a glimpse of this only this week with the demo of the Figure 1 robot powered by ChatGPT? Or is deployment at scale, still a couple of decades away at the earliest? What's your take on the robot revolution with ever smarter AI brains?
Deployment is here. I mean, Samsung had the Ball-E, which was at the CES this year
well,
which is a robot which, and I call it soft robotics, and I call it soft for two reasons. It's soft because they now have human-based skills. They're dexterous. They understand. They're warm and friendly. They have this softness. They're not like Terminator, hard, industrial, scary robots. Yeah. You know, they're humanoid assistants, little butlers, if you will. And the Ball-E ones are, I think, a really great example because it makes suggestions, it follows you around, it can zoom up on the wall, whatever screen you're using, and organize things for you, almost like an assistant following you around the office. And I think that's a great example. But what we're going to see is dexterous robots combined with language models where we can teach the robots what to do and the robots can observe us and then really participate in the home. So this idea of, let's call it the Jetsons robot, I think is absolutely already here at a micro level. We're going to be astounded in the next 5 years. And I would envisage that robots inside the home will be like TVs were in the 50s. They come out a little bit, they may be a little bit expensive, and then straight away, everyone's going to go, well, I don't know how I lived without that. I mean, our houses will be tidy, it will be organized, we'll know what's going on, we won't be late anymore, we'll be able to do our work wherever we go. I mean, I absolutely cannot wait for this. It would be amazing.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it too. I mean, it's science fiction becoming science fact, and it's exciting. And you know, we're going to have these at scale. I mean, they'll just be everywhere and they'll be genuinely helpful. Again, if you haven't had a chance to have a look, for the people watching, go type in Figure 1, the number 1, with ChatGPT, and you see this robot that's, you know, stacking, passing over an apple, stacking plates and dishes into a rack. And the person asking them says, well, tell us how you think you did. And the robot says, oh, I think I did pretty good. I gave you the food and I stack the things without breaking anything. And, you know, it's just, we're seeing the future unfold. It's really exciting. Now, the fourth trend is energy management, where your home is a mini power plant. And energy efficiency has been a feature of modern homes for decades, and solar panels are everywhere, battery systems are being more, rolled out into homes as well. So what were your findings and predictions here?
Yeah, I mean, for me, the term that I use, as you mentioned, is building equals power plant. And if it isn't, it should, right? Because we have wind and sun hitting our house that can generate all of the electricity that we need. Everything in our house is going to be electric. I know we've already outlawed gas in new houses in Victoria, I think also in Canberra, in Australia. I'm not sure what the situation is overseas, but it's going to be all electric. And our house can gather and store all of the energy that we need. And even though we've had energy efficiency and star ratings in the past, the next step is what we call the ZEB, right, which is the zero energy building. And that's a building which generates all of its own power, stores all of its own power. And then from this, the next phase is what we call the energy internet. And the energy internet is just like the internet, but instead of trading content, we trade energy with each other and we send it across to where it is needed. And we have micro little power plants in our little community here. And this is part of the trend towards decentralization. Just like media used to be big and centralized and now it's fragmented and decentralized, energy will fragment and decentralize because we have the knowledge now to gather energy and store energy and redistribute it as we need. And again, your car becomes part of this as well. Maybe it goes and gathers energy at a solar farm where it car parks and it drives in and then uploads what it needs to the house. And then you get this whole interaction where you have an ecosystem of energy usage where we do it ourselves. And you almost move to a zero marginal cost energy. You have setup costs, but you don't have ongoing costs like you have now with electricity or gas.
Yeah, well, this is part of that whole post-scarcity economy that Star Trek predicted. And I do remember seeing many years ago on one of the cable news networks that somebody in Hong Kong was taking advantage of all the wind that was sort of traveling through the city. And they built these little wind generators that they put on their balcony and they were able to power their homes. So, I mean, people were just doing it themselves. And of course, we now have so many sort of batteries and solar panels on roofs. The ability to share that power across other people in your suburb should be here. That we shouldn't be having these outages.
Right. It's possible right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, the fifth and final trend from your report was transparent TVs taking off, invisible devices to revolutionize visual interactive experiences. And if you go to my website, techadvice.life, I've got the link to the report that you wrote. It's 8 pages, it's a PDF. Mm-hmm. But I saw Samsung transparent panel technologies at CES in 2024. And I also saw LGs. Now, we've seen this technology in TV shows like The Expanse, where they had transparent panels of glass that were the show's answer to today's smartphones. And on either side of the glass, you had these holographic displays, which suggests that eventually there'd be no glass panel at all, but just holographic displays in space, like we saw in Star Trek Discovery. So they'll be expensive when they launch, but they'll eventually come down in price. What are your predictions on this and other forms of advanced tech?
So this is, and it's great that you mentioned, because this is one of the ones that is a bit expensive. It's a little bit like the flat screen TVs and the plasmas as they were when they came out in the late
20 grand. Right? Now they're 200.
It's similar to that. But what we will see with these is in sporting and entertainment environments, I can imagine being at the Premier League or at the baseball in New York or at the AFL at the MCG, having a screen in front of you which has all of the statistics, the replays, and you can look right through it to the live game, or you're at the Taylor Swift concert and it's giving you information and details on the song and the lyrics. And it's all of these really cool applications from an entertainment perspective, sporting perspective, and also in the corporate environs. And that's where we'll see that first, and then that will trickle down into the home. So the idea that we'll have thin, transparent films that become TVs that we can just put up on the wall, that the windows in our houses will be transparent, they will generate energy, and they will be web connected and have the highest resolution. It's not if, it's just when. And we've already seen these examples at the CES of what Samsung's put together, that we can already do that. And that's something to get excited about, because technology, as I mentioned at the moment, it's like big chunks of furniture and it takes up space and you got to put it there. And this is the idea of it just becoming integrated into those futuristic glass-looking homes. And if we just imagine here for a second, whenever we see something from the future, it's a lot of like glass and white and green, and it seems less intrusive than the technology is now, where you have a view to the world and it doesn't take you away from the world. It lets you transparently participate and see that the world you're in with the ability to interact with the technology simultaneously.
Yeah, and look, we've seen Apple Vision Pro, which is transparent screens in front of your eyes. Samsung's working on those. Google and others are working on that as well. And, I mean, that's just another form of transparent technology where it's just so much information is just out there and you're able to take advantage of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, Steve, how smart is your home? You know, what kind of home automation technologies are you using?
You know, I've got some really retro technology in here. My favorite thing that I've got out of technology is my old arcade game from the 1980s. That's what got me into tech. But look, I've got quite a few laptops, smartphones, smart TV. My fridge is a bit old. My washing machine is smart, but they're not all integrated yet. They're not integrated yet in terms of an IoT. I do have a smart camera on the front of the house and a smart lock. I've actually probably got a little bit, being a bit of a nerd, I've probably got a little bit more than most people, but I haven't really got to that full integration yet. And I feel like we're just on the precipice of all of these technologies starting to talk to each other. So, I'm not next level Star Trek, but I've got a few.
Yeah, we're on the cusp of it all. And in talking about AI as we did before, which are your favorite AI tools and how are they helping you do better work?
Yeah, I mean, my favorite one's probably Agent GPT. And Agent GPT is one of the AI tools where you don't just ask it a question or ask it to do something. You actually set it an objective and it will set its own tasks, complete its tasks, and then invent new tasks based on what it found on the previous one. And so that's a layer up on large language models, where it's got another model which enables it to ask its own questions and then report back on those. I also like some of the voice recognition and video recognition pieces of software. You know, often when I do blogging, I write a blog most weeks, and I will get it to read out the blog in my voice and publish that on the blog without me having to read it. So some of those simple ones, and I use all of the large language models and the image generation engines as well. And I use those almost like I would use a Microsoft Word document these days. They're just open on the screen, and I'm just going back and forth and using them in the day-to-day work. They've actually in the last year just become such a part of my work, image generation and language models. I almost don't even think about that now as something new. I'm so integrated with it.
It's become an invisible part of your life. And this agent GPT is something that I remember reading about several months ago. And it is, as you say, the next level where the AI is really getting much smarter. Now, Steve, you mentioned briefly the arcade machine, but what was the catalyst for you deciding to become a futurist? What was the unforgettable moment? You know, was it something you saw on TV beyond this arcade machine?
Look, I'm going to go backwards first and say I was always interested in technology. From a really young age, I wrote my first lines of code at the age of 12, and that was because I loved video games. And my mum would ban me from going to the arcade games because she said there was unlikely sorts in the arcade back in the early 80s. Arcade sort of places weren't the nicest places. They weren't like Time Zone. And I just wanted to learn to make video games. And so that was how I got into computers and coding. But the futurist thing happened much later. I studied economics at uni. I already knew how to computer code, so I didn't do computer science. And then I worked in marketing for about a decade. And what happened was in the Web 2.0 furor in the early 2000s when that came back, I left work and built my own software company and my own web business. And I did pretty well, and then I sold that to a public company. And what happened was all of my ex-colleagues were like, what's happening with this web and this internet and this social media? Can you come in and share a few ideas? And I was always blogging about it and starting to do talks and writing about emerging technology, changing business systems and society, because I understood the tech and I understood commerce and marketing. I had these three bits. One is human behavior, anthropology. The second is economics and business. And the third is code. And those three things I mashed up together, and people just started calling me a futurist. Someone said to me, are you a futurist? And I was like, oh, I don't know. Am I? I just talk about business and tech. And when I started doing keynote speakers, my agent said, Steve, we'll call you a futurist. You get 20% more money. I said, let's go for it. So it was like I was doing it by stealth. And essentially I was just putting together those pieces of the puzzle and giving a viewpoint on what is a plausible trajectory and sharing that with companies and my books and my writing. And it just kind of happened. But I was deep in that nerd world for 10 years, and then people just started calling me a futurist, so I just went with it.
Pretty cool. Now, the taglines for my show are AI, security, and technology, which covers pretty much everything today. So what are your thoughts on cybersecurity? I mean, homes of the future could be hacked, and also there's the issue of mental wellness, where all the defenders and ourselves, we're under this constant threat, but cybersecurity professionals are never able to sort of relax because, you know, the call at 2 a.m. could be the one that's telling you that, hey, you better come in because all of our data is leaking on the internet. So what are your thoughts on cybersecurity?
Oh, I've got a thought. It's a bit controversial, Alex. Are you ready for it? Okay, here it goes. My thought is that incentives shape behavior, and right now there is little incentive for corporations to protect data as much as they should, because if something goes wrong, it's like, sorry about that, because there's no real heavy legal consequences. That's my thought. I think it's incumbent upon the government to get more serious about protecting our privacy and our data. And if that happens and there's real financial or legal consequences for companies that abuse that and don't protect it enough, then all of a sudden you're going to see the miracle of things being more protected and greater cybersecurity.
Yeah, well, certainly Claire O'Neill, our federal minister looking after this, has spoken about company directors being fined. So that sort of thing is happening.
They need jail time. They don't need fined. They need jail time because the buck has to stop with them. We have industrial manslaughter laws, right? And we've got to remember that a hack could end someone's life. If you don't have access to a phone and you have a medical emergency, that could end someone's life. If we have a hack into the energy grid, that could freeze people to death. This is serious. This is not, someone stole my photos. It's serious, and we need to take it seriously in a legal context.
No, absolutely. Now, we've only got a couple of minutes left. What is a memory you can share of your first computer?
Oh, I love this. So my first ever computer, I got it in grade 3 for Christmas, and it was a TRS-80 16K RAM-only computer. And I used to write code all day, didn't even have a screen, just the keypad with the hardware underneath it. And I'd plug it in on Saturday and code all day. And my mum would say, sorry, I need the TV. It's news time. I'd have to plug it out and then recode again. And that repetition got me really good at it. And I used to make games on it, but 16K RAM only, no hard drive. I used to save things on a tape and then use machine language to load it back up after I saved things on the tape. So that was my first ever computer. And I love that thing so much. And all of those years later, it sort of turned into a career.
Yeah. Now, where can we find out more about your work and where you'll next be appearing?
The best place to get me is stevesammartino.com. You can see my blog there. You can sign up to my update. The best place to get me is stevesammartino.com. You can see my blog there. You can sign up to my updates. You can see all my radio, TV interviews, all the work that I've done. My latest project is Macro 3D, where we build robots that 3D print houses. So that's my latest project. I'm always doing something to learn about tech. We want to print low-cost houses. And that's the best place to find me, on the conference circuit in Australia and in Asia and the US. And I've got three this week, but I can't remember where they are. But I publish them always on my social media when I'm going out. So follow me on Instagram at Sammartino. You can hit me up on LinkedIn, Steve Sammartino. I accept everyone's request. And follow me on stevesammartino.com and sign up to my email. That's the best place to get me.
Steve, it's been such a pleasure to speak with you today. I do look forward to inviting you back onto the program in the future. And yes, check out stevesammartino.com. Thank you again.
Thank you so much for having me. I really love the chat, Alex.
Really appreciate it. Well, thank you for joining me on Talking Tech with Alex Zaharov-Royd. If you're watching live, Lembit Opik is next. It's now 9 a.m. in London, 8 p.m. in Sydney and Melbourne. A very good morning, good afternoon, and good night to you all. And I'll see you next week, not only on this show, but on Cyber Wednesdays with the excellent Chris Smith Show here on TNT.